Hi everybody, and welcome to this counselling tutor lecture. And like I say, I've done a couple of these, so it's a real privilege to be invited back to do them again. And I'm especially excited about looking at beliefs, values and attitudes, because I think it's absolutely essential for us as counsellors to be exploring this as part of our counsellor training, exploring our own internal beliefs, values and attitudes. But it's also really useful to understand beliefs, values and attitudes so we can support our clients as well, because often we will be working with some of their maybe less conscious edge of awareness beliefs and values and attitudes in the counselling room, and it can be really, really helpful to think about the work in that way as well. So today we are going to here's our learning outcomes. We're going to be aiming to understand how to gain an awareness of our internal core beliefs, values and attitudes, and why this is essential for personal development in counsellor training. So we should be able to describe what beliefs, values and attitudes are and how they differ from each other, because they're all, although they're all related, they're all quite separate things. Also, we need to be able to recognize the importance of exploring our own beliefs, values and attitudes for self-awareness and personal development. So why we as counselors need to be able to do that, you know, we need to be able to explain and understand why it's so important for us to understand our and uncover sometimes our beliefs, values and attitudes. We're going to be exploring a little bit of how beliefs, values and attitudes develop, where they come from, you know, what influences our beliefs, and looking at culture and family and those kind of things. And we're going to explore what might make it more difficult for you to gain awareness for you of your own beliefs, values and attitudes, because time and time again in personal development groups, in the ones that I did, you know, when I was a student, and some of the ones that I've led, we find that you know, counsellors, trainee counsellors, it can be a really difficult process, can't it? And it can be a really difficult process sometimes uncovering what your beliefs are and where they've come from. So we're going to just have a little look at why it might be so difficult to go through that process as well. So hopefully you might be able to approach it in a slightly different way in your training. So we're going to start off just by looking at the difference between beliefs, values and attitudes. And like I said at the start, they are all related, but they are all quite separate. So we're going to start off looking at beliefs. And I found this lovely definition, which is: a belief is when we have a feeling or thought that something is true. So it's quite an abstract thing, isn't it? A belief. It's not something concrete. It's just a feeling, or it's a thought that something's true. And you know, that could come from a number of different places. It can just be that we believe it's true because our parents have said it's true, or it can be for lots of different reasons. And like I say, we'll explore that a bit later on. But what's really interesting about our beliefs is that we can hold internal beliefs even if we don't have any evidence that they're true. And like I said at the start, though this is, we're focusing on counsellor development and our training in this particular lecture, that can be really true for our clients as well. And really, it's what some of the CBT techniques are based around, is uncovering those unconscious core beliefs that are affecting the way that we behave. So it's, if we can hold that in mind as well while we're going through this, I think that you'll get an awful lot from the session. So the next part is values. Values are important and lasting beliefs about what is good or bad, desirable or undesirable. So my values will be different from your values. You will have a different idea of what's good or bad, or you know, desirable or undesirable than I will. And that will be based on your beliefs. So depending on what your beliefs are, that's how your beliefs feed into those values. And we'll look at a few examples in a minute so you can get your head around that a bit more. But our beliefs feed into our values. And our values are the things that often guide the way that we live our lives. So the things that we think are important guide the way that we live our lives. And that's how our values then feed into our attitudes. And attitudes, the way that I kind of think about it is attitudes are the thing that people can see. So we hold our beliefs and we hold our values, and our attitude is the way that we express or apply our beliefs and values through our, it's got three different strands, through our thoughts, our emotions and our behaviour. Okay, so those are the kind of the things that people out there will see when it comes to our beliefs and values. That's how we express them. So I hope that makes sense about how they are different. And I suppose it's not absolutely essential that we know the exact differences between them, but we need to kind of see how they feed into each other. And I think sometimes if we can kind of start with an attitude and then work our way down and think, okay, why do I behave that way? We can work our way then down to a value and then down to a belief. And like I say, that's a lot of what CBT is based on, that kind of getting really down to that core belief. And it's only when we get down to that core belief that we can start to maybe challenge it a little bit and do something a little bit differently and change those attitudes and the way that we behave. So we'll look at a few examples, help you get your head around it a little bit more. So, beliefs. And I've put, I don't believe that I'm kind, as an interesting one there, because the things that we don't believe are just as important as the things that we believe. And they also form our values and our attitudes. So I don't believe that I'm kind is also a belief about ourselves. And we hold beliefs about ourselves. We also hold beliefs about the world around us. And we hold beliefs about other people. And the kind of belief I don't believe I'm kind could really be quite a damaging belief, couldn't it? And again, that can really affect things like self-esteem and the way that we behave. So that's why I put that one in there, because I thought it was a really, really interesting one. Another example of a belief, I believe that children should be seen and not heard. Again, I think that's a real cultural one, maybe for people of an older generation. Maybe I'm stereotyping a bit there, but certainly I think in this country, in the UK, we have a bit more of an attitude towards, you know, children, that they should be seen and not heard, as opposed to other countries that I've been to. So it's really interesting to see that we might kind of have these beliefs and think of them as truths, but actually when we go somewhere else, we start to notice that these beliefs aren't necessarily a truth, you know, it's just a belief, and it's all fed into this belief by our culture, by our surroundings. Another one, I believe that real men shouldn't cry. And I think that's a really common one. Again, I'm only really speaking for the UK. It's toxic masculinity and, you know, this attitude that men shouldn't have emotions in order to be strong. Really, men shouldn't be human, which is quite a damaging belief. But it's, a belief I think a lot of us, if we really looked into our beliefs, we probably, a lot of us, hold that in this country in particular. And I'm not sure about elsewhere, but I'm sure, you know, these kind of male and female differences really persevere, I suppose, in other countries as well. I believe in God. And that's a really good example of us believing in things that maybe we don't always have evidence for, or, you know, we can't absolutely definitely say that it's true, but we have a belief, we have a feeling, you know, we have a faith that that's true. So I hope those examples have made it a little bit clearer for you. Values. And again, some of these beliefs feed into these values. So I value my family. I think my family is really important is what I'm saying there. I think my family is really important. It's one of the things that I value in my life. I value honesty. Yeah, that's a characteristic, isn't it? If you value honesty, it's really interesting maybe to think about, well, why do you value honesty? Where's that come from? You know, these things will have some, there'll be a seed where this was planted, and whether that's a belief that people who lie aren't nice people, if that's come from childhood, it's really interesting to start unwrapping these, I think, anyway. I value efficiency. That's one that I certainly uncovered when I was doing my counsellor training. I value efficiency. I really think I should be efficient, and I think other people should be efficient. And when they weren't efficient, it used to really upset me, and maybe I would show irritation, and my attitude to that person would be quite negative, and my attitude towards myself when I wasn't efficient was quite negative, and that comes from a belief that, you know, I suppose that we should do everything well. If we're going to do something, do it well. That's my belief. So I really had to challenge that, because let's be honest, if we always have to be totally efficient, then we probably wouldn't take many risks in our life. So that's an example of one. I value optimism. Now, that's one that I see all of the time. And it makes me a little bit sad, but it's one that I see all of the time, you know, that people really value optimism above all else. And sometimes, again, it means that we don't allow ourselves to be human, because we're always expecting ourselves to be so positive all the time. But we might value optimism again because of a belief that we have that negative people, I don't know, negative people are bores or something like that, that we might have had from when we were younger. Again, values can be things that we don't value as well. So education might not be important to us. And I use that particular example because that kind of feeds into the example that I've got for attitudes here as well. So like I said earlier, attitudes can be broken down into three different things. Attitudes are the way that we express our beliefs and our values. And attitudes can be broken down into thoughts, feelings, and behaviour. So if we are somebody that doesn't really believe that education is important, doesn't really believe, you know, we need an education to, you know, have a good life, we're going to then we don't value education. We don't think education is important. So it's not something that we value highly. And that might come across in the way that we behave. So our thoughts are, I hate school, or I hate college, or whatever it might be. Feeling, I feel angry when I have to go to school. I just don't see the point. It feels like a waste, you know. And behaviour, well, I'm rude to my teacher, and I might just play up. And I put that one down as a teacher, certainly something that I've seen in the classroom. And it comes down to the fact that actually there's no value there in an education system, that it's never been taught to a young person to value the education system. So I hope that makes it a little bit clearer, the difference between the three, and that those examples were useful to you. And we'll move on really to have a think about, why do counsellors need to be aware of their beliefs, values, and attitudes? Now, like we said at the start, it's absolutely essential that we are aware of our beliefs, values, and attitudes. And I've given some reasons here we'll go into in a little bit more detail. Is, you know, if we are going to be going out there working with our clients, we have to really believe in what we do. We have to believe that, you know, there's some point to sitting talking about our feelings and our attitudes and the way that we behave, and trying to unpick it all and understand it a little bit better. You know, we have to actually believe that. So, you know, we kind of advocate for that for our clients, that they need to accept themselves in order to, if we're using Roger's language, self-actualize. But actually, if we don't do that ourselves, how can we sit there in front of our clients and say, this is what's good for you, this is what you need to do? We need to experience it ourselves. And the next part of that really is this idea that we are our own tool. In counselling, we don't use any other tools. And I talked about this a little bit when I did the lecture on journaling. So if you saw that, that I'll be repeating myself, because actually we talked in there about why self-awareness and personal development is so important. This is what we're doing here. When we're looking at our beliefs, values, and attitudes, we're exploring ourselves. We're getting to know ourselves. We are developing our self-awareness. And we're saying, okay, we want to understand ourselves so that when we are sat in front of a client, that stuff that we carry around with us is not muddying our work with our client. Many of our beliefs and values will be at what Roger's called our edge of awareness. Other therapists might call it our unconscious. Maybe psychodynamic therapists would talk about it being in our unconscious or our subconscious. But we don't always know what our beliefs and values are. They are so deeply ingrained in us that, and our culture and our families, that we don't always know what they are. So we need to really get to know ourselves better so that we aren't going to respond differently to our clients who are in maybe a different situation to us, or a different, come from a different culture. We aren't going to judge them unconsciously. We aren't going to have unconscious bias. We're going to be able to sit with them and be with them and accept them as they are. And I'm thinking in particular of the BACP guidelines in terms of their ethical framework. And you will sign up to, if you're a student counsellor, chances are you signed up to a particular ethical framework. It might not be the BACP, which is the British Association of Counsellors and Psychotherapists, for anybody that's not in the UK. But you'll be signed up to something, hopefully, to say that I'm going to work ethically, and I promise to do that. And if I don't do that, you're going to hold me accountable. And they say, I've written this down, that we need to give our clients fair and impartial treatment. And how can we say we can hand on heart sit there with our clients saying we're giving them fair and impartial treatment when we haven't even looked into our beliefs and our values? I'm going to explore that a little bit later, because it's quite a hard thing to get our head around, I think, that idea that we don't always know what they are. So we'll put a pin in that and come back to that in a little bit more detail. And again, I go on to talk about the fact that we are the tool used in counselling. How can we trust ourselves to offer that unconditional positive regard if we haven't explored our own unconscious bias? Now, I'm not saying that we can't have particular beliefs that maybe make it difficult for us to treat everybody equally. You know, I think it would be impossible, absolutely impossible, for all of us to be totally unbiased, to not hold tricky beliefs sometimes about certain things, certain situations. That's impossible for us to get rid of that totally. You know, we need to challenge that, of course we do, but I'm not saying you can't hold those. But what we need to be able to do is consciously bracket those. So what I'm saying is, when we sat with a client, we need to be able to say, okay, I'm aware that that bias is coming up inside me, that belief is coming up inside me. It's maybe going to change the way that I'm behaving in the counselling room. And it's going to come out in my, you know, in my thoughts and maybe some of the things I might say. So I'm going to say, okay, I've seen that, I've heard that in my own mind, I'm going to put it to one side, and I'm going to be there with my client in the best way that I can. I'm going to stay with them, and I'm going to stay in their frame of reference. So I hope that makes it clear why we do need to really explore our beliefs, values, and attitudes as counsellors. And I think I've got an example coming next. Yes, here you go. This is an example of how maybe not exploring them, not knowing what our beliefs, values and attitudes are, how that might impact a counselling session. So imagine we are in a counselling session with a man who begins to cry. Now, if we hold a belief that we don't know about, which says real men don't cry, you know, we might not really know that that's there. It might be on the edge of our awareness, but we've been brought up with this belief. We just kind of know that we feel a bit uncomfortable when men cry, or it just kind of makes us feel something. So we have that belief deep down, but we don't know about it. We value, our value is, we value men who are strong and don't show emotions. And actually, we hate men crying. That's our attitude. That's what we kind of project onto the world. So if a man cries, we might, in a counselling session, without really understanding why, feel irritated, feel awkward. We might think, oh God, they're being a bit pathetic. That might come into our mind. And we might try to stop them from crying or try to avoid emotional content. So it could really impact the work that we do with that particular client. And that's all kind of done unconsciously. I don't think it's done on purpose, but it's done unconsciously because we've never really uncovered that belief. We've never really explored that. And we've never really said, okay, I know now that if a man cries in a session, it makes me feel uncomfortable. And I know why, because I've been brought up with this idea that real men shouldn't cry. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to, in a session, notice that, put it to one side, and try and notice when that's coming out, when I'm showing it to my client, you know, when there's those maybe subtle or subconscious kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? I think I wrote it down somewhere. Oh, body language. That's the word I'm looking for. So we've got that subtle body language that maybe they're picking up on. That's one example. Another example that came into my head, and again, I've done a lecture for Counselling Tutor on suicide awareness, and I talked about it in that, this idea that, particularly in the UK, and I'm sure in lots of other countries, suicide is kind of seen as this thing that we shouldn't talk about. You know, we shouldn't really mention it. We shouldn't talk about it. We're going to make it worse. We're going to put ideas in people's heads. And holding that belief, can you imagine how damaging that would be if we held that belief and we hadn't uncovered it and looked at it and thought, okay, oh God, this is making me uncomfortable. We might sit in a session and not ask about suicide. We might sit in a session and not really explore that with a client, or we might, worse, project that a client can't bring that to us, can't have that conversation with us, because when they go there, we start to look a little bit worried, or again, that sort of body language might come out. So the attitudes that we put out in the world really are as a result of this, these beliefs, which is why it's so, so important that we get to know ourselves well enough so that we can notice the beliefs coming up in ourselves and put a pin in them, I suppose, be able to say, okay, bracket them is the term that I think Mearns and Thorne use in their book, bracket them, put them to one side, put a pin in them, and then maybe come back to them later and take them to supervision and say, oh God, that thing came up again, and can we look at that, because that's obviously not something I've worked through, or how am I going to make sure that stays to one side when I'm in a session. You know, it's that awareness. We're not perfect as counsellors, none of us are, but we need to be aware of the things that trigger us so we can take a step back and say, okay, I saw that trigger and I made a decision about what to do about it, rather than I just was triggered and I behaved a certain way. Again, I hope that kind of explains why it's so, so important for us as therapists to really uncover this. And you can see as well, just looking at this, that it could really impact the way that our clients behave towards other people as well. You know, even in relationship with us, we might start to see some attitudes being shown to us that might be quite damaging without them even really knowing. So again, bear that in mind while we're talking about this. So where do beliefs, values and attitudes come from? We've talked a little bit about this, but it's this, the first one I've put down is family culture. And obviously our parents, the way we've been brought up, that, you know, our carers play a large part in the development of our beliefs, attitudes and values. So they reinforce our behaviour, the stuff that they like, they reinforce. You know, that's conditioning, isn't it? I don't know if you've looked into that with Pavlov behavioural conditioning. Again, it's CBT stuff there. But also they will model for us. So the way that they are in the world is what we think is normal. And what we think is normal will form a belief system within us and a value system within us without us even really knowing it, because to us it's just normal. And again, that's what I'm talking about when I say sometimes they're really hard to uncover, you know, these beliefs, because they're just normal to us. They just feel like truths that we hold because that's what the way it's always been for us. Wider culture, this includes things like culture of the country we were born in, and I'm going to go into these in a little bit more detail in a minute, because I think you know, we can explore them a little bit more. And also our experiences. So our experiences of the world either confirm or challenge our beliefs and values, and that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? But when we start to really look at that, it's really interesting to see that perhaps it's not always challenged in the way that we think. Anyway, we'll move on and look at that in a minute. I'm getting ahead of myself. Family culture. So I am a person-centered therapist, and I do bring in other elements to my practice, but I do talk about Rogers a lot. I hope that's okay by you guys. But Rogers believed that we are social creatures who need love and care from others. In order to get this, we begin to value things because others train us to do so. And that's not just Rogers that says that, you know, there's attachment theory. There's all sorts of different theories that would say that. I mean, psychodynamic counselling is therapy is very much based on the fact that, you know, the way that our parents bring us up has a massive impact the way that we relate to other people. So he's not on his own in saying this. Here's an example. A baby might cry if she's sad. However, as she gets ignored when she cries but picked up when she's smiling and happy, she may learn that in order to be hugged and held, she needs to smile. And then she may develop a belief that being smiley and happy is good. That then leads to an interjected value of I value optimism and positivity. So you can see there how that would change her attitudes, the way that she behaves growing up. It's that whole conditioning, isn't it? It's that you know, those conditions of worth. She's learnt that she needs to be smiley and happy, to be loved, that worth. So she then develops a belief that it's really important to be an optimist, like we said in the last one. And she begins to value that optimism and positivity in herself and in others. So if she's sad, can you imagine when we bring it back to working with our clients, if she's sad, can you imagine how much she's going to judge herself if she's feeling sad? You know, how difficult that's going to be for her to hold on to. She's going to think she's bad in some way. So that's a really interesting kind of part of that. So this might then lead to an attitude of irritation when others express emotions, or a very solution focused attitude with people to try and stay positive. So that's how the attitude is expressed. And, you know, it wouldn't be too hard for us to imagine that a child from another family might conversely get picked up and hugged when he cries. So might learn to, might develop a belief that it's okay to show emotions. You know, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? And I'm simplifying it, because there are so many things that play a part in our development of our beliefs and our attitudes and our, you know, our values. So this is kind of simplified, because like I say, then we mix that with the culture and all sorts of other things. But, you know, it still has an impact, and we'll see that in the counselling room. We'll see that in our personal development groups with other therapists that we're developing with, training with. And we need to start to see it in ourselves as well. We also learn through modelling. For example, if our parents have traditional roles, we might believe that women should stay at home and look after the children, while a man's role is to go out and work and earn money. And that might mean that we just believe that a woman shouldn't be pursuing a career. You know, there's lots of things like that we might believe. And it's really interesting, because I've done some research on motherhood. It's really interesting to start look at our beliefs around motherhood in relation not just to our parents, but also to the wider culture, where they come from and how we judge ourselves if we don't believe we're being a good mum, and how harmful that can be. So that's just reminded me of that in my own mind. So I hope that makes sense. Wider culture. So we're constantly being bombarded with cultural messages through the media, through our families, even through our education system. I know I've taught in schools, and I know that they have the British values that's taught to them now, and it's, you know, seen as a really important thing. And it made me think about the kind of British cultural stereotypes that might inform our beliefs. So I know there's people from all over the world here, but yeah, I'm talking about us in the UK, and I'm sure that you can, if you're not from the UK, you will have heard of this stereotype that we have, which is we believe in general that we shouldn't make a fuss. You know, we shouldn't be emotional. We should value stoicism, and that's kind of just keeping quiet and stiff upper lip, that kind of thing. And we then display a keep calm and carry on attitude. And that's kind of one of the things that's come up along this whole coronavirus thing, this keep calm and carry on, which we really do value in each other as a society. And again, this is a generalization. I'm talking about Britain as a population, the UK, sorry, as a population. But I think that all of us can relate to that and understand that probably has rubbed off on us a little bit if we are from the UK. So these cultural beliefs, values and attitudes are impacted by so many different things in each culture. Things such as history, religion, economy and immigration. And, you know, we're talking about wider culture. We're not just talking about countries. I'm talking about regions, we're talking about towns. I live somewhere that's well known as Jambutty Town, because it was built around the workers who worked at an ICI factory. So it has its own identity, and its culture really rubs off on people here. It's fascinating. And I'm thinking in particular about Yorkshire. And I know there's a cultural stereotype about people in Yorkshire which says that they're very careful with their money, is what I put to begin with. And then I thought, well, actually, what I mean is tight. So I hope nobody's offended by that. It's a cultural stereotype that's out there. And actually, I know lots of people from Yorkshire that are quite proud of that cultural stereotype. Okay, so then we go on to talk about our experiences. So our experiences with the world, you know, what we come into contact with, who we come into contact with, can either confirm or challenge our beliefs. So as an example, if I met a few very generous people from Yorkshire, I might let go of the belief that all people from Yorkshire are tight. I don't think all people from Yorkshire are tight, by the way. I feel like I've got to put that in there. That's an example. But it just shows how our experiences can challenge these beliefs as well, but our experiences can equally confirm them. What's fascinating about this is that there's something called confirmation bias. And experiments show that we're more likely to look for and believe evidence to confirm rather than challenge our beliefs. I think that's absolutely fascinating. A cognitive psychologist called Peter Wason, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, found that people were more likely to look for facts that prove they were right rather than wrong. And this might be one reason why it's so hard for us to change our core beliefs. You know, we just see the evidence that something's right, that we believe. And I'm thinking in particular about, you know, if we believe that we're not a brilliant person, it doesn't matter how many times somebody says to us, but you did this, you know, you went shopping for your neighbour. You were, I saw the way you were with that little girl who'd fallen over. You know, you were so lovely to her. If you believe you're not a kind person, you know, you just look for the stuff that confirms that. You don't look for the stuff that negates that as much as you want to. It's really, really sad. But yeah, it's fascinating stuff. And I was thinking in particular of social media and how often we live in sort of an echo chamber of people that just kind of feed us back our own beliefs and our own attitudes and our own values because we choose to listen to them and not to the other people. And I think as a country, we're perhaps becoming even more like that. We're really kind of only listen to the people that make us feel better, that make us believe that we're right, you know. So that's an actual psychological thing that's been proven time and time again. There was a few experiments that I read about. So fascinating stuff. But it does show how difficult it is for us to challenge our core beliefs and to change our core beliefs when we are, you know, our makeup is to confirm them. That's what we naturally would do. Interesting stuff. I hope you're finding it interesting as well. So that brings us on to really explore that a little bit more. Why is it so difficult to challenge our beliefs, values, and attitudes? And it is difficult. It's absolutely difficult. And I've seen it time and time again, like I said at the start, personal development groups where people end up feeling hurt or upset. And that's all part of the process, sadly, sometimes. We don't want people to be hurt and upset, but sometimes they kind of need to face some of their beliefs, attitudes and values. And it's not always an easy process. It really isn't. And here's why it's not an easy process. So they can be buried deep. So it's hard to know. So it's hard to challenge them if we don't even know they're there. Sometimes they are buried so, so deep within us. Like we said, they're so buried and ingrained and a part of what we consider to be normal, a part of what we consider to be true, I suppose, that we don't even know that they're there. Many of these beliefs are reinforced often by family and culture, so they start to become truths. Yeah, that's what I've just said, isn't it? Example here, I thought this is a really interesting example. I was listening to some children when I went to pick up my kids from school. I was listening to some children, they must have been maybe six, something like that. And one of the lads was watching a girl play football and he said, "She's good at football for a girl. Wow, you know," he's really impressed. And this girl came up to him and said, "What do you mean good for a girl? That's sexist." And I just thought that was absolutely brilliant. I was so I was so pleased the girl had challenged that a little bit. And he was absolutely devastated, this boy. You know, that's not sexist. I wasn't being sexist. I was just saying she's good at football for a girl. But actually, if we dig down into that, what is underneath that is a belief that girls can't play football. You know, so there is a belief there that he holds as a truth that girls can't play football. And that's what's shown in that statement. And he had no idea. And even when challenged, he said, "Well, actually, no, I'm not sexist," because that goes against everything he wants to believe about himself. He's a good guy. He's not sexist. He doesn't, you know, discriminate against women. He's not, you know, so you can see how it can be so challenging for us to start looking at these beliefs. It's not nice, is it, to hear that about ourselves? And sometimes they are buried so deep that even when we do challenge them or when somebody points them out to us, we automatically say, "No, that's not true," because he really believed that he wasn't sexist. So I think we can see that in so many of the ways that we behave. We don't, you know, they just become so normal to us that we don't know they're there. So many things. And it's only when we go to different countries or spend time with different families and things like that that we start to think, okay, that's not normal. That's not the way other people behave. That's not the values that other people have. That's not the beliefs that other people have. They behave differently. They have different attitudes to me. So that isn't necessarily the truth, the way. And that's when we maybe start to uncover some of these things. But while we stay in whatever bubble that we might stay in our families, in our small cultures, in our societies, in our towns, we don't always have the opportunity to challenge these, to see them, to know they're even there. I hope that makes sense. Next one. They often feel like part of our identity. Perhaps we're frightened to let them go. Really hard, this one. Sometimes our beliefs and values are so strong. And if we've held them from when we were very small and we're older, you know, they kind of run deep. They're part of that core that is us, aren't they? They become part of us. And it can leave us asking who we are without them. And I've seen this time and time again in the counselling room, working with men who've retired, actually, generally men, because they've believed, you know, I've worked hard all of my life. That's what men do. Now what? You know, once you kind of take that belief, once you take that role away from them, they believe they're not a man anymore. They believe they're not the same person anymore. You know, I've got to keep on working. I've got to keep on providing for my family. That's my job. That's who I am. So when you take that away, I think a lot of men in particular who retire or lose a job or become made redundant can really struggle with that. And again, that's a stereotype, but it's my experience. It can be really hard. So these beliefs that we hold, and his belief would be, I believe that to be a good man, and I am a good man, I believe to be a good man, I have to work and provide for my family. So all of a sudden, if I can't do that, what am I? Who am I? They just go so deep. You can see how difficult it is to take it out, look at it, and maybe change it. It's not so easy, is it, just to do that? Sometimes they contradict who we think we are, and that can be hard to face. And I kind of used that example, didn't I, earlier, of sexism. But, you know, we have all have these ideas about the type of person that we are. And actually, often we get that quite right, but it can be really hard to accept if we've got that wrong, particularly if we don't want to be that person. And I'm thinking about somebody in my family, and I won't use any names, but somebody in my family who, if you say that they're homophobic, they just would be, they're gutted. You know, they're not homophobic. Freddie Mercury, who's the lead singer of Queen, is their favourite, absolute favourite person. So how on earth could they be homophobic? But when somebody kisses on a television program, two men perhaps kiss on a television program, they really can't deal with that. They want it switched off. Nobody wants to see that, but they're not homophobic, you know. And they would be absolutely gutted if they started to see that they were homophobic. But actually, what is that if it's not homophobia? What is it? Because they don't object to a man and a woman kissing on the television. So what is it? And if it's a disgust at that, then, well, actually, where does that disgust come from? It comes from a belief that it's wrong, that it's not, that it's a disgusting thing to do. So, but they would be so upset if I, you know, said to them, you're homophobic. Well, I have said that to them and they were upset. It really does contradict the kind of people that we think we are sometimes, and it can be really, really hard to accept. So again, sexism, homophobia, racism, all of those things, but more subtle things as well that maybe we don't want to face, sometimes we have to face when we're doing our counsellor training. And sometimes, you know, we might uncover them with our clients as well, and that can be really hard, really difficult. So I've put there, how can we begin to challenge these unhelpful beliefs, values and attitudes? And I think maybe that's the wrong thing to say. Maybe it needs to be, yes, we challenge some of them, we will challenge some of them, but other ones, it's kind of, how do we manage them? Because it might be really hard to get rid of them, to, you know, make them go away. They are such a part of us. Maybe the best we can do is say, okay, I now know that I have that belief, and it comes out in this particular attitude, or it could come out in this particular attitude, which means I've got to recognize it when it starts to, I suppose, be heard in my own mind. So you know, challenge, but also get to know, uncover those unhelpful beliefs, values and attitudes. And this is a really important way, and this is why we ask you as tutors to sit in groups with other trainee counsellors, and we ask you to be honest with each other when it's sometimes really hard to be honest with each other. We ask you to, sometimes it can just feel really mean to do that, and you can think, oh, if people think we're so unkind doing that, but we want you to do that so that you can start to uncover those things. And sometimes uncovering those things is so uncomfortable, and sometimes being the person who is saying to a different person, I think that that shows that you hold this really difficult, ugly belief that you know about. That can be really an uncomfortable place to be, but actually you're helping those people develop as a counsellor. What I think is absolutely essential is that we need to try and accept that as counsellors, trainee counsellors, and we need to try and not be defensive. Really difficult, I know, really, really difficult. But if we can approach feedback with curiosity, and curiosity is such a useful way to approach so many of these things. If we can find a way to step back and say, okay, I'm going to be curious about this. Is this true or is this not true? I'm not just going to immediately be defensive. If we can do that instead of responding from a place of fear or judgment or fear of judgment, then that puts us in a much better position, doesn't it, to be able to really move forward from that. So the feedback can come from friends. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be in our counselling training. It can be from lots of places because, you know, again, Rogers talks about becoming a person. It's not like, oh, well, we do our training, then we are a person. You know, we become a certain way. And I think when we train as counsellors, we develop some sort of integrity where we carry this person. We stop putting on a mask with different people. We are the same person with everybody. And that means our training is not just about what we do in the classroom. Our training is about listening to our friends, listening to the people that we value outside of our training, understanding why our reactions are a certain way. So it's not just the classroom is my point there. So friends, partners, personal development groups, intercounter groups, teachers, feedback from placements, feedback from supervision, feedback from anywhere, you know, take it. Try not to be defensive, or be defensive if you need to be defensive, because I know that people come from so many different backgrounds, and to say don't be a defensive is really difficult for some people. But if you are defensive, you know, maybe after a day or 2 days, look at that again and say, okay, I'm going to go back to that. Why did I respond in such a defensive way? And I'm going to go back to it with curiosity. Self-reflection, and we talked about this a lot when we did the lecture on journaling and how useful that can be. If we can reflect on our own behaviours, on our own thoughts, on our own emotions, because that's that bit that we see, isn't it? That's the tip of the iceberg, that bit that we see. They are our attitudes, which are our thoughts and our feelings and our behaviour. So if we can start to reflect on our own behaviour, on our own thoughts, on our own emotions, again, it's that without judgment, then we're halfway there, aren't we? You know, we really need to start noticing ourselves. We need to approach it with curiosity again instead of fear and judgment. And when we're working with our clients, if we can get our clients to start to hear themselves and, you know, have a feeling without judging it, wow, we've done a brilliant job as counsellors, I think. If we can start to have them experience a feeling and be curious about that feeling rather than tell themselves that they are bad for having that feeling, wow, we've done a really good job there. So if we can do that ourselves, that's fantastic. So we do that through that self-reflection is through personal therapy. So you use your therapist for that, you know, and I know for most courses, personal therapy is absolutely compulsory, and that's the reason why It is supervision. Supervision is a fantastic place to uncover those biases. You know, I've sat with my supervisor so many times and said, I just felt uncomfortable in this situation, or I don't know why, I just don't like this client and I can't understand why. Wow, that's fantastic, isn't it? To sit there and to uncover a belief and a value that I hold that's impacting my work. That's what I mean. We're not perfect. None of us are perfect, but we need to be able to be open and curious enough to understand what might be standing in our way as therapists. So it's through supervision and through journaling another way. And like I say, there was that past lecture on doing that as well. And I was thinking about, in particular, I don't know if any of you guys have seen this, and I know that I've seen Rory do a lovely, quite short lecture about it, which is Jahari's Window. It's fantastic, and you can use it as a tool to understand yourselves really a little bit better. I won't go into it now, but I would definitely recommend looking that up and finding out a little bit more about that as a really useful tool to self-reflect and to use in your personal development. And that kind of brings us to an end, really. And just to remember, none of us are immune. You know, I'm a counsellor. I judge people. I'm human. That's what we do. You know, it's actually how we survive. We have a shorthand for seeing people. And often it works. So, you know, just remember they keep coming, these beliefs and values and attitudes. We keep developing them, which means we absolutely must continue on our personal development journey. And we must keep meeting our clients without judgment so that we can work ethically and safely with our clients. And there's some references and further reading there for anybody that wants to have a look at this in a little bit more detail, a look at personal development in more detail. So thank you very much